Hi, friend, and welcome to the Unapologetic Entrepreneur Podcast, a place for passionate entrepreneurs just like yourself who are looking to create a business that integrates into your life instead of taking over it. So let me ask you something. How would it feel to unapologetically chase your definition of success? See, I'm on a mission to do this, and I want you to come along with me in becoming an unapologetic entrepreneur. This is someone who has defined success on their terms and is committed to setting boundaries and making progress towards achieving that success. I'm your host, Amanda McKinney, and after several years of entrepreneurship, I found myself chasing someone else's definition of success, and I actually couldn't answer the question, what does success look like for you, Amanda? This started me on a journey to understanding this answer for myself, and I now understand that our definition of success, it evolves over time. But the key is to always know what our definition is in each season of our life. And on this podcast, I am dedicated to exploring how other entrepreneurs have shown up unapologetically and sharing my journey, of course, too. So pop in those earbuds so we can explore topics such as success, goals, mindset, of course, marketing, and money. You will walk away inspired through stories and ready to take action through clearly defined steps. So let's dig in. Hi, friend. Have you ever wondered if women approach entrepreneurship different than men? Well, this is something that's crossed my mind a few times. It's not something I've ever researched. So when I met someone who actually researched this, I knew I had to interview her. Wendy and I met in the writing program where we were both writing our very first book, and we really hit it off immediately. And so a shameless plug for both of us is that at the time that this is going live, which is May of 2023, you should be able to get both of our books, our digital version of the books at least, on Amazon. So if you'd like to support us, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Winnie's book is titled, You Don't Have to Look the Part, How East Asian Women Thrive as Entrepreneurs and Make a Great Bet for Investors. Isn't that fantastic? As soon as I saw her title, we were in the writing group and I was like, oh my gosh, this is such an amazing topic. And then when I saw the title, I was like, I definitely want to meet her. And like I said, we really just hit it off and have stayed connected throughout the entire program. So I have been fortunate enough to see behind the scenes of her book and see so much of the inside of it that it's such a powerful read. I'm excited to dig into the entire thing for sure. But in this episode, we dive into why Winnie is passionate about entrepreneurship. And I just loved her story. It was one of the first things I asked her in this episode. And it is just a fascinating story. Her approach and really why she cares about entrepreneurship is so incredible. You're going to really enjoy that. And then we talk about, of course, how women approach entrepreneurship. And then we dive into something that I've never talked about because it's not the route I took in entrepreneurship, and that is venture capital funding. And that's something that she really highlights in the book, is that in the world of venture capital, meaning you go out and raise money for your business so that you have the funds to do things in your business. And that's just, again, not the route I took with my business, and not many people that I work with do. And so she shines a light on that whole arena of the world that I didn't even know, and how most investing is through men. And so her stories related to this are super fascinating. So I think you're going to love that too. And of course, we talked about how women define entrepreneurship. So Winnie really packs this with stats, stories, and inspiration. So get ready because it's a good one. But before I turn it over to Winnie, I want to tell you a little bit more about her because, again, she is an amazing person. Winnie Wong is a business leader, educator, researcher, investor, and philanthropist. She has over a decade of corporate experience working with startups, scale-ups, and big tech companies. She's an advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion in entrepreneurship. Winnie has mentored foreign domestic workers in entrepreneurship and advised social impact funds in granting $1 million to female-led startups. She holds an MBA and was named a rising talent by the Women's Forum of the Economy and Society. A Canadian-born Chinese, Winnie has lived in Canada, the United Kingdom, France, China, and Singapore. Such a fascinating woman. I'm excited to have her on the podcast today. So let me pass over the mic to Winnie. Thank you so much, Winnie, for being here today. I am so excited to talk to you.
Thank you for having me, Amanda. I've been listening to your podcast and I love all the stories and the guests and even your little mini like spiels that when you're by yourself and sharing an episode. So I'm so grateful to be here. Thanks, Amanda.
You're welcome. And thank you for listening. And I love that you call it like the little spiels when I'm by myself. And, you know, you're seeing me in my office here. And that's exactly what I do is like, I'm sitting here by myself, just talking about something. And I always imagine there's a chair sitting across from my desk that I imagine someone sitting there, like, and we're just having a conversation. So I'm glad that it comes across that way.
That's why I always wonder, how does she do this? Kind of just talking for like, you know, I don't know, 30 to 45 minutes, like by yourself the entire time. I don't know if I could do that because you have to also think about new content all the time and ask yourself new questions. And most of the time, our ideas are the same ideas stuck in our heads, right? Like 95% of the thoughts that we have are thoughts that have already come up before. So it's amazing that you're able to press on and kind of just innovate in your head of like, just go and talk about new things every single time.
You know, I get that question a lot of, don't you run out of ideas? And the answer is no. It's pretty fascinating. When I started this podcast several years ago, almost 4 years ago, I thought, can I create an episode a week? Like, will I have enough to talk about? And here we are several years later, and I have legitimately thought about doing 2 episodes a week because I have so many content ideas and so many questions to answer. But it's really interesting that you say like the 95% of our thoughts are like the same. And I actually do talk about a handful of things over and over and over and over and over again on the podcast, just a slightly different take or with a guest versus by myself or what I newly learned about that topic. So we do come back around to the same content over and over again.
Yeah, I think it's also one of those things where, especially with your message and your audience and kind of the tools that you've learned, you're constantly iterating on them as well, right? Like it's, and that's kind of the journey that every entrepreneur goes through is like they go with a product and even though the product has like, it's geared towards solving a specific like problem, it gets iterated, it gets better over time. There's different takes or you get different feedback from other guests and so forth. So kind of cool to seeing and learning more about your entrepreneurial journey.
Well, thank you. And I completely agree that it's just learning. And I've been using this phrase a lot lately, know better, do better, where we learn something. Like I think I know about X today, but I hope I learn more in the next 5 years. And so as we learn, we get to share a message in a new way. So that's what an entrepreneur is. So speaking of entrepreneurship, I would love to know how you found this passion of really understanding how women show up in entrepreneurship, because I'm fascinated to hear all things of like how you got there.
Yeah. So I am originally from Canada, and just to share like, how did I think about entrepreneurship? Why am I interested in writing about it? Why women and why minority women in particular? So I grew up in Canada. I'm a Canadian born Chinese, and I was lucky to study abroad on a scholarship to China when I was in my undergrad. And while I was there, I just fell in love with Asia. So many years later, I decided to move to Asia. And so I moved to Singapore in late 2015, or early 2016. And something that was so fascinating to me when I did move here was that there's a thing about foreign domestic help. So, and it's very different in, you know, like Western societies versus Eastern societies, where foreign domestic help is essentially having people imported, like, and usually women imported from other countries, usually of lower economic status, to work and live in one's home and perform domestic duties in one's home. So coming from Canada, a place where I was born into equality and, like, you know, equality across races, genders, all these different things. Like, it's a big part of Canadian culture. And then moving to Singapore and seeing a bit of servitude, actually, and realizing how lucky I was with my position, being born to parents of, like, middle income stature in Canada, I started to realize, like, what is the difference between equality and equity? And equity is really, you know, something that focuses on righting the past wrongs, like, of the past. So, you know, when you're, I know race in, like, America is a big thing as well, where, and affirmative action is one example of equity programs, of trying to, you know, because people are not born at the same, like place in life, they try to help push people and help support people who were not able to get the same opportunities growing up. So I actually started volunteering with Foreign Domestic Helpers in Singapore, teaching entrepreneurial financial literacy and technology courses with them to help them learn about entrepreneurship, because many of them would move to Singapore for 40 years, work there, and they would make something like 350 to 400 USD a month and send it over to their families in the places like the Philippines or Indonesia. And it'd be sad because whenever they came home after those 40 years, nothing in their household would have changed. Their family was still poor, still living in the same place, but there might be a new motorcycle in the front of their home. So it was really because of the cycle of poverty, of the lack of financial education, that a lot of these women's lives didn't really change, or their families' lives didn't change. So knowing that I had this difference, like, you know, I started in a different place in life, that's how I started getting involved in teaching these entrepreneurship courses. And I saw these women really change before my eyes, from being very timid when they first joined and would sit in class because they're used to being told what to do all the time. And they're not supposed to speak up, right, in when they're living and working in the household, to eventually becoming so confident, they'd raise up their hand, they'd be publicly speaking, they'd be sharing their ideas, their business ideas. And many of them, actually, they would learn about savings and how to invest in productive assets, like buying land or starting their own business. Like, one of my mentees started an ice production business in the Philippines, because many households in the Philippines do not have access to fridges. So during COVID, when people were under lockdown, it was a huge problem. People were facing starvation in the Philippines because they didn't have access to fridges. They were always eating out. They had to buy things, like, every single day because they couldn't afford a fridge, or they didn't have, you know, they didn't have electricity at home to plug a fridge in. So, yeah, I learned a lot through this program, seeing women grow. And, that's kind of how, like, I started to learn a lot more about entrepreneurship and how I really wanted to support entrepreneurs, because this program, it was so amazing that, like, you know, I think it doubled the number of productive assets that every, like, alumni owned. It business ownership increased from 6% to 40%. And with every woman who participated in this program, it had a network effect on 9 other lives back in, you know, their home countries. So it was a live case study of how entrepreneurship could change someone's life, because it wasn't about what's given to them, or, like, you know, did they go to the right school or anything, that they were creating a future for their families. So that's kind of how I got into entrepreneurship. And I just leaned so much more into it throughout school, throughout, like, everything I do that I volunteer with is for women entrepreneurs. Like, I've raised money for I've raised money for survivors of domestic violence in Bhutan who were retrained in different vocations, like, to become seamstresses, so that they could build, you know, they could actually earn money again for themselves and their children now that they had separated from the breadwinners of their families, and then build their own businesses and really, you know, become breadwinners for their own families. So, yeah, that's something that I'm super passionate about. And when I found out that, you know, women-founded companies only get 2% of venture capital funding in an industry where that's, like, hyper-dominated by men, but women continue to own one third of businesses, it spoke to me that we're so under-indexed and there's a huge problem out there of why are women, you know, and minority entrepreneurs not getting the spotlight that they need. Because there's also research conducted by the Boston Consulting Group that says and shares that women founded or co-founded startups actually generate 10% higher returns despite raising less capital than male-led startups. So it's not that female-led startups are worse off or like, you know, returning less. There's something else going on. And that's what my book really explores is, you know, what are the barriers that are causing this to happen? Because women actually are entering entrepreneurship actually at a faster rate than men, especially after COVID or throughout COVID. And then, you know, what are some of the common themes from the woman that I've profiled? And, you know, I think it's amazing because some of these things I so relate to, like our inner critics of like how, of how do we speak to ourselves and how do we show up for ourselves is so important because you have to believe in your idea before others can believe in it as well. And you have to be able to take them through that journey as well as, you know, the third part of my book is really how do we support these entrepreneurs, whether it's educators, you know, having role models in the classrooms or, you know, through protagonism of like, you know, just knowing that there are female CEOs or female entrepreneurs who have actually generated a lot of returns or they're really great leaders that people admire, and allowing young women to see that they can become leaders. You know, a CEO is not necessarily just a white man. It can also be a minority woman as well.
Oh my gosh. I love your passion for this so much. And while you and I have different stories, right? Everyone has a different story. When you were sharing about just seeing someone go from being timid to raising their hand and then making money and making an impact, how that can change your life. Like, that is why I do what I do too. And it's so cool that we have that in common and have approached it so differently as well. Like, you're teaching and empowering so many women who aren't even thinking about doing it. Like, they don't even know what they don't know, right? Whereas I'm approaching it from someone wants to start a business and they're like, can I do this? I don't even know, but I've got this idea. I think it speaks so much to entrepreneurship that there's room out there for all of us. And whatever lights you up, whatever gets your passion going, like, that's what you get to do. And thank you for sharing that because it was a beautiful story of, I felt like I was right there with you. Like, I don't know what the visual was, but I felt like I was there with you with like in a classroom setting with these women. And it's so beautiful. And I can only imagine the fulfillment that you experienced through that of having them feel lit up and excited to do those things and really have the ripple effect, like you said, not just with them, but with 9 other people. So I'm just so grateful that you shared that story. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for allowing me to have this platform to share it as well, because what's amazing, even like what astounds me even more is the fact that these women, they only get one day off a week. It's their Sunday. And so these classes are taught on Sundays, you know, so it's every other Sunday that they go for these classes over like a 9-month period. It used to be 1.5 years, but you know, because of the contracts are usually 2 years long, sometimes they would often drop out because it just didn't line up with their contract, their employment contract. But yeah, they invest a lot of time because there's also homework. And so imagine like they sit in class on their one day off for 3 hours, you know, learning about like assets and liabilities and, you know, revenue and sales. And then they're also learning, some of them are touching a computer for the first time too.
Wow.
Because they've just never typed. They've never had to type on a computer. They might have a phone that, and whenever they were interviewing for their role, they would go to the agency physically and maybe interview over the Zoom, but they would never actually touch a computer. So there were such varied levels of capabilities from these women when they start. But what you realize is if you have the will, there is a way.
Yes.
It's just finding the different. Yeah, exactly. It's just finding the right support systems and opportunities to help support these women, because it truly is amazing how you see the women who have a will and they really believe, I want to do this. I'm going to do this. I want to be home raising my own children in the Philippines. I don't want to watch from afar over the next 40 years while they grow up, have children, have my grandchildren, and like, I'll never meet my grandchildren until I'm like, you know, 40 years down the line. So it's really amazing seeing also that these women, within a matter of, you know, 7 to 12 years, they're able to save up enough where their business is generating enough income that they're able to go back home. And a lot of employers actually support this. A lot of employers really do want to see their foreign domestic helpers go home and, you know, be happy with their families and see the money that they've earned really like take off and support the family.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, part of me was thinking about that. Like, I wonder how that is on the other side of like, is the family supportive of this? And that is awesome to hear. And, you know, one thing that you said during that was they are so like willing to put in the energy, to put in the effort to make it happen. And you said, because I want to raise my own kids and watch them grow up. And one of the things that I talk about a lot is understanding our true why. And whenever we understand our true why, we'll figure out the how, which is what you said of like, when there's a will, you'll find the way to do it. And these women sound like the best example I could ever explain, which you explained, I didn't really do it, but that we could ever explain for that truth of when you really have a strong why that you can get behind, you'll figure out like, okay, I've got one day off a week and I'm going to spend 3 hours of that one day off learning so that instead of being somewhere for 40 years, I can be there for 12 and then go home. That's powerful.
Yeah, it's amazing because they just change so much, but it's the willingness to learn. And I talk about this in my book as well. It's the growth mindset, right? Mm-hmm. It's about not just like, oh, I think there's many mindsets that we can have. And I've been guilty of like, you know, having a victim mindset in certain points in my life as well.
We all do. We can all fall into those traps for sure.
I think it's really about picking yourself up after you fail or you fall down that really matters, right? And like reflect and the reflection of, you know, how can I make this better? And I think, you know, there are times in our lives, like, you know, let's say you go through a job layoff, and I have gone through a job layoff myself. And this is something I speak super openly about because I really learned a lot from that time when I really reflected on like, what did I do wrong? What would I like to change about the future and future positions? How can I speak to myself better and be more self-compassionate? And I think from your podcast as well, that's something that I've learned from you is self-compassion is super important towards it like really getting is. Up and, you know, cheering yourself on.
It's so hard. And I think, thank you for saying that you've heard me say that and that it's helped you because it's something that I try to say every day. Because it's something that's so easy to forget. We can feel, and I'm saying all 10 fingers are pointing at myself, of like, I can feel like, poor, poor, pitiful me. This is so hard. Why is this so hard for me? But when I really think about it, there's a lot of good, and I'm probably learning that really tough lesson in that moment so that I can support myself and others later. You know, if I think back to lessons I've learned in my personal life, as well as entrepreneurship, I've been able to relate to someone on some level later and say, I remember going through that. And in order for me to say that with true compassion, I had to go through the crap. I had to go through the hard stuff. And so I just try to remind myself every day of like, there's a reason that I'm going through this. And I've got to be compassionate to myself, even though it's really, really hard. So I feel you on the fact of like picking ourselves back up is important, but it's often really difficult to do for sure.
Okay. I have a question for you.
Oh, sure.
And as a heads up, we are totally going off script now.
I love that.
I'm super curious about faith, actually. Do you believe that that there's kind of like a destiny, or there's a fate, or there's a certain path that you and the universe, that the universe has kind of already decided you need to go through? Or do you feel like, you know, the world is a bit more random, and that, you know, we kind of have to swim on our own through it to learn from our challenges and become the best that we can be? Do you feel like there's a preordained destiny, or is it up to us to decide our fate?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I would say, gosh, I feel like a little bit of both all at the same time, because I think that there is like things that are like supposed to happen, right? Like I'm supposed to learn this lesson, and there's a reason for that. But I also believe in free will, that we get to choose. Like I have the choice, like, do I eat that berry that's going to kill me or make me severely ill? Even when I know that, or do I choose not to do that? You know, like I believe in that. So I think that there are challenges that we are presented with in life that in and of itself was destiny, fate, whatever we want to call it, like that thing that we are presented with. And then how we navigate that is the swimming. If that makes sense. So I don't know if I would say it's hardcore one or the other. I think it's, we have some things that are predestined of like, okay, because I have characteristics about myself. Like I have a unique gift. So that's another thing. Like I do believe that everyone has unique gifts that we were born with and that we can cultivate and learn. So it's not like you're born and like people are public speakers, right? So people are really gifted in that. They didn't know that when they were born, you know, they couldn't speak yet, right? So they had to cultivate that. But we all have characteristics that I think we can learn and grow within. So that allows us that. And if we tap into those gifts, again, free will of choosing of like, do I utilize that gift or not? And so that's how I would look at it. What about you?
It's tough because I kind of swing through a pendulum between the two. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of times where I'll look back on my life and realize that was supposed to happen so that I could learn this and I could get to this next step.
Yes.
One example is like, you know, I've gone through some very tough like work experiences in the past. And I think I'm in one of the best work experiences I've ever had in my life, actually, now. And it wouldn't have happened if I had gone through such rough times and I had been pushed out of organizations, or I've met some people who I just didn't click with, you know? And then now I'm in one of the most amazing situations ever. And I'm so grateful every day for it. And so in those two times, I feel like, oh, it was meant to be. Mm-hmm. But then when I look at, and I shared with you about like some of the guilt that I carry, given that I was born in a different position in life than some of the foreign domestic helpers who I've worked with, and seeing that they're born into the situation, you know, of a higher degree of poverty than I was born into. In those situations, I don't quite understand why is it happening to those people.
Yeah.
Or if someone's, you know, domestically abused, I don't understand why they didn't ask for it. You know, why are they being punished for it? You know, what are they supposed to learn from it? Right. So I feel like I kind of swing in a pendulum, like a pendulum between those two thoughts of like, oh, my life is so great. I'm so grateful for everything. But at the same time, why don't other people have it as good as I do? And mm-hmm. I don't think that I'm any special to deserve my life or the quality of my life any more than others do.
Oh, I completely agree with that. And I'm with you on that pendulum of having those same experiences of thinking, okay, this has happened. These hard things have happened because I needed to get to the other side. And I'm so now grateful for those experiences, even though they were really difficult. And when I do interact with someone who has just had so much more hardship than I have had, I think that same thing of, but why? Why did they get that? And I didn't have that experience. And I don't know about you, but often, not always, I'll be very clear with that, not always, but often I'll meet people who have had worse, like I wouldn't say worse, like more hardship, because everything is a perspective of our own perspective, right? But more hardship than I've had. And they are happier, more fulfilled. They're more grateful for everything in life. Like I experience, when I experience that person who I'm like, I don't know how you went from this situation to where you are now. And you are a very grateful, positive human being. Like I am impressed by that every single time. Have you experienced that as well?
I mean, Oprah is one of those people.
Yes,
actually.
I was thinking of her too.
Yeah, I think she was like, you know, her family life wasn't easy. And I think she was sexually abused when she was younger as well. And I think she also had a teenage pregnancy. But despite all of that, that's kind of why I'm in awe by her.
Same.
Is because she's gone through so much. And like, she didn't reveal a lot of this until a lot later in her life too.
Right.
She kind of kept it under wraps. But I remember actually, I've like listened to a lot of her books, or like, you know, a lot of her interviews, and she shares about how one day she was interviewing a Ku Klux Klan member, because she wanted to like, you know, kind of change how he was seeing things, or like kind of have that broadcast on her show. And then she realized, oh no, I've given this guy the wrong platform, you know, and it was like a click in her mind. And I realized that's kind of one of the moments where she realized she wanted to do something different. She didn't want to, because her show for a while, when she first started out, it was about a bit of like sensationalization, you know, of like, oh, this person's cheating on this person or whatever. And it's very heartbreaking to see this kind of stuff. But then I think slowly she started to realize, you know, my show isn't doing good. It's getting like good enough ratings because of the sensationalism, but it's not truly helping people. I realized that I'm hurting people through all of this, right? So that's how she ended up starting, you know, her own network, where she got to her own syndicate, where she got to control a lot more content. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I love her. So Oprah, if you're listening, feel free to have Amanda Nicholson and Winnie Wong on your interviewed on your show at some point.
Please. Oh my gosh, what a dream that would be. I too am fascinated in, just in awe of how she's navigated that. And I think, you know, bringing it back to entrepreneurship, like she's a great example of, you know, pushing through a lot of barriers because her why was strong and she got to it. And now she's able to help so many more people because of that. And you, in your book, which is a fantastic book that I have had the privilege of seeing quite a bit of it behind the scenes, which is wonderful. So you don't have to look the part. And I just love this take and how much you interviewed different people. And I'd love to hear how you, through your research and through your interviews, you saw the difference between how women approach entrepreneurship versus how men approach entrepreneurship. Would you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think in how women approach entrepreneurship versus men do, I think I'll like talk about in kind of, you know, three ways. One is kind of the barriers that they face and like how women actually face more hurdles than men do. Secondly is, you know, how do they think about it and what's their relationship with themselves, which is truly kind of the keys to success. And then thirdly is also how our communities can better support them, like how they can better support women in particular versus men. And so, you know, how do women show up differently as entrepreneurs is that in the barriers that they face, a lot of women, they work in like the service industry, for example, or during COVID, there was a lot of layoffs in the retail and hospitality industries, which are predominantly women-based. So a lot of women, as a result, they needed to find employment, but they also wanted it to be flexible. And that's how women actually ended up starting businesses at a faster rate than men did during COVID. I think the like self-employment rate was something like, I think it was in the past 5 years, it's doubled for women versus for male founders, it's only increased by 55%. So women really lean into entrepreneurship as a way to be more flexible. And that's because women also take on like historically a higher degree of domestic duties. And thankfully, this has been declining over time because, you know, there's governments or people are really starting to lean in a lot more into like gender and gender roles and understanding like what does it mean or understanding, you know, equity in the household as well, or equality in the household, or being and showing up as true partners. So that's kind of one area in terms of the barriers that women face, as well as like other areas was also the unconscious biases that they face. Whether it's maternity, for example, that, you know, a lot of, you know, founder or Silicon Valley leaders do not want to invest in solo female founders because they're worried that they might have children and they might not, you know, they might not want to, they'll choose their children over their business versus with male founders, they never ever consider that a male founder will choose their children over a business. You know, it's always in tandem together, you know? So, and they actually look highly upon, you know, like men who are fathers actually. So, yeah, there's a lot of unconscious biases that women face and in the, as entrepreneurs. And that's kind of why a lot of what we have to do in ourselves is the self work. And so some of the work that I've kind of done in my research, with the keys to success of how some of these women have triumphed over these barriers is that they've really been able to do a couple things. Like some of these themes include, you know, empathizing with the customer. Women are really great at listening and understanding problems, and they really focus on what is the problem, like before they get to the solution. So one of those stories that I share in my book is actually about Weiling Tan, where she was an entrepreneur. Well, she wasn't an entrepreneur. She was a consultant working in Kuala Lumpur. Kuala Lumpur is one of the worst cities in the world to get a taxi, especially at night. It's very unsafe for women. And so she was working with consulting firms, and she would get home between, or she would leave work somewhere between 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. on a nightly basis, which is super unsafe. And she used to try to drive herself home, but she'd just be so tired, she'd be falling asleep on the wheel, which was more dangerous. So instead, she would take a taxi, and she would, her mom at home would wait up all night while she, her like daughter had like a Nokia flip phone and would text her. This is the before the era of smartphones, the locations of like, oh, we're turning past this road, or we're turning here, we're on this road now, so that her mother could estimate, okay, my daughter's going to be home in 7 minutes or in 2 minutes or 50 minutes or however long. So because of that, Weiling Tan realized, you know, it's not safe for women to get home in like Southeast Asia. And so when she went to Harvard Business School, she actually, she met her co-founder who, her co-founder is also a Malaysian whose family is one of the main distributors of Nissan vehicles in across Southeast Asia. And so they together started working on this business plan of, hey, what if we could start riding on the smartphone era, kind of like what Uber did, where you have a phone that helps, you know, gives you your GPS location, you can order a taxi off of it, and then, you know, it will actually show on a GPS how far you are from your location. You don't have to tell the taxi driver anywhere that you're going. It already shares how much it's going to cost. And so that's what they brought to Southeast Asia. And it ended up, it's actually one of the biggest super apps now. So, wow. You know, going back to some of, yeah, they've actually done a really great job as well in thinking through what are the problems that, you know, East Asians are facing in, or Asians or people who live in Southeast Asia are facing. And Uber, they actually ended up acquiring having a bit of a merger with Uber because, you know, they were just going through a price war and battling out,
right?
You know, and their rides were so cheap at the time that nobody was making money. But yeah, it was really amazing where they've really thought about, okay, every country in Southeast Asia is so different. We've got countries in that have people are riding motorcycles all the time because, you know, you can't afford a car, or a car is too wide for the streets that they're in, right? So, or a lot of countries didn't have cash at the time too. So, or sorry, not cash, but credit cards. So Uber is like hyper dependent on the credit card industry. But imagine if you're just using cash to pay. That's such a chaotic way to do business, or it's just, it's really, really tough when you've got motorcyclists or drivers collecting cash and then you've got to reconcile with this platform, right? So they're actually one of the first, they're actually now in Singapore, one of the first digital banks. They're growing, they're building a digital bank, one of the first licensed digital banks in Singapore that has absolutely no locations at all to where you can do banking. It's all completely digital. So it's incredible what they're doing. So getting back to your question about, you know, women, how do women do business a bit differently? Some of it's just like their skill set's different, like the listening a lot more to the customer, also having their, being able to tame their inner critic and understanding how do I talk to myself? Because a lot of women, we're a lot more risk averse actually. And I feel like it's like kind of ingrained in us as children, and it's a bit of a social conditioning. And often we're told that we can't do something, or nobody has ever done this before. No woman has ever become the president of the United States. So why should you be, you know? So I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, and kudos to Hillary Clinton for her, one of her, like bidding for that role twice. You know, it's a lot about changing your inner narrative as well, and kind of also looking at other factors in their life, like the immigrant mentality that a lot of East Asian women face, especially if they're born and raised in America, or, you know, the socialization of like giving back, how important it is for entrepreneurs, because they realize that we're all part of this greater network or a greater system that we can't just do it alone. Nobody can do it alone. So those are some of like the part two of my book. Mm-hmm. And then the third part is really, how do we get these solutions going? How do we better support women in particular who they can't necessarily travel to conferences like many men do, because many of them take on so many domestic duties. How do we reach them as entrepreneurs? How do we educate them, or how do we get them access to resources that they don't normally get? Because the VC world is full of men. It's male dominated. Only 7% of venture capitalists are women, in fact. So, you know, if only 7% of them are women, how do we enter those networks, for example, of venture capital? Because you typically invest in people that you already know. And for my pre-orders, I can say that the majority of the people who've pre-ordered my book have actually been people who knew me for some time and they wanted to invest in my story. So, yeah, it's been a really cool journey going through writing this book and learning so much about myself and unpacking different parts of myself as well throughout this book writing journey.
Oh, thank you so much for all of that. My goodness. I just can't wait to soak in every single word of your book. I know I've seen a lot of it because I got the preview, but oh, it's so good. And it opened up so many moments for me of like, things I just don't think about, because my story of entrepreneurship and most of the stories that I have witnessed to don't go down the venture capitalist route. It is, I'm going to start this business on with my $150 that I have or whatever it is. So it's like, I'm going to start this business and I'm going to grow it versus asking for funds. Now, granted, I'm a service-based coach, right? So I'm not creating a tech product, whereas that's more something you'd have to go for venture capital. But it was such an eye-opening experience because for me, I recognized how much I have in common with those same women who are going for venture capital. Whereas I thought my entrepreneurship journey is so different from hers. Because I didn't go down that route, but I realized, oh my gosh, we deal with so much of the same thing. That inner critic, that flexibility is exactly why I started my business. I mean, I was interviewing for jobs and realized I think I'm going to give this a shot. Like, I was so nervous. I didn't know if it would actually work out. And there's still days where I'm like, is this going to continue to work out? Like, it's always up and down. And so we have to deal with so much, but it was really fascinating to read all about that. And I just really appreciate that you followed your passion and really continued to learn from other women on this. And another thing I wanted to ask you about is success. So another thing that I really talk about is defining success on our own terms. And you have interviewed people, you've done a lot of research, and you've heard a lot of people talk about success. And so I'm curious, did you come across anything that where someone said, success for me means this? Because I have found that not very many people actually define success for themselves. Did you read or research or interview people that define success?
That's actually a tough one, because actually my part two is the keys to success. And so I actually don't think I have an answer from anyone I interviewed about, you know, what does success mean for them? I think a lot of people might say it's something like, I want to hit 100 users, or like, you know, by, or 100 million users, or $100 million of revenue by a certain date. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, you know, as I've gone through this, I don't feel like these women care as much about money, actually, or like hitting a certain goal. They care about hitting their goal, but it's not the end goal. Like, I know Kevin O'Leary, one of the judges on Shark Tank, he shares that 75% of his returns came from woman-led startups. And so Shark Tank, by the way, is I think it's an NBC hit reality television show of where entrepreneurs share their business pitches in exchange for potential angel investment from a number of these very successful sharks or angel investors or people who have billions of dollars who have started their own companies. So it's interesting because women in particular, like, I find that the themes are not necessarily, I want to be the CEO of this company. It's more of like, I want to do a good job. I want to help people. And my chapter 10 in the book is about giving back, actually. And although many of them are now, like, for example, Melanie Perkins, she's one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest woman in Australia. And in the last couple of years, her net worth has been pegged at about like $6 billion. So for her, she kind of says, it was not ever about just like making money. It was about finding ways to give back. And so she's actually going through her own journey of philanthropy, of learning what's the best way that I can give back? How can I invest in others? And that's something that a lot of other women are doing as well. Like Jess Lee, the co-founder of Polyvore and the first female partner of Sequoia in the US in its 44 years as a venture capital fund in the US. Sequoia only actually got a female partner after the 44 years there. And they chose Jess Lee to be that female partner. And so she actually started a a community called All Raise, which helps entrepreneurs to learn about funding. Like, they have different like webinars about, you know, how do you raise your seed funding? How do you go pitch? Things like that. As well as with venture capital, because only 7% of the venture capital industry is full of women. She actually created networks and cohorts where, you know, women of different levels in the venture capital industry can actually be part of a circle together, and they can share information. They can share the troubles that they're facing. And it becomes a safe space. So I think for these women, success isn't necessarily about money, but it's actually about giving back and helping others. I think, I think when you ask me about what does success look like for me, I gave it a bit of a thought. And one of my favorite quotations is, the reason we struggle with insecurity is because we compare our behind the scenes with everyone else's highlight reel. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about this whole book writing journey, is that we see that, like I said, Melanie Perkins, she's now worth like $6 billion, but she took 3 years to fundraise, you know, 3 years is a long time to believe in an idea and not even have a product ready. She spent 1 year looking for a chief technology officer. She would go on LinkedIn. She'd travel. She'd go everywhere. Even if she was on a bus, she'd go look and move. She'd be like, oh, you work in technology. You can code. Like, you want to be my CTO? Like, she was looking for a whole year to find a CTO. Then she learned kite surfing to be able to go and like meet people, meet venture capitalists in their kite surfing activities, you know, and she'd be stranded in the Caribbean, you know, like, you know, treading water, waiting for like, you know, help to come because her kites surfing equipment had broken, you know. So she's really gone through a lot to get there. And I think, you know, what success is really a lot about grit and getting up. And I think accepting that life has ups and downs. We all have them, but we never get to see the downs and the lows that many people go through because many of us are very ashamed to share about them. But realizing that everyone goes through ups and downs and that, you know, you will pick yourself up, but it's important to always just take that next step, move forward, and understand that tomorrow you'll do better. Don't worry about it.
Oh, yes to all of that. And it's something that you're talking about of having like people set these goals of, I want to hit $100 million or 100 million users or whatever it is. And, but that women approach it a little bit differently of like, they want to do something else. And so something that I wrote about in my book, which is really fun to be able to kind of weave this in, is I specifically interviewed a ton of people and asked them about success, right? Just like I'm asking you. And what I found is that, first of all, most people don't define success for themselves. I didn't define it for myself. I ended up chasing someone else's definition of success, right? Of what I think I should have. And so that's how I ended up on this journey. And what I realized is that most people don't define it. But what they do look at is that they're like, I want to make $100 million. I want to make $50,000. I want to make like whatever the number is. But then when I continued to dig and continued to ask, there was always what I call a so that part of their sentence. So it was, I want to make $50,000 in my business so that I can contribute $2,000 to my family budget. Or I want to make $100 million in my business so that I can start this nonprofit foundation that really means the world to me. There's always a so that. And that's the thing that you're hitting on of like, these women want to give back, but in order to give back, you have to have money, resources, you have to have that. And so you have to set a goal financially to hit in order to get the so that part of the sentence. So I'd love to hear your reaction to that.
Yeah, I think that reminds me of when I was in MBA school, we did this amazing course called like decision making and judging or something like that. And you would think that it would be about math because it was like under the statistics department, but the professor, he was the highest rated professor or one of the highest rated professors in my MBA school. And he completely changed it where it was just a workshop where you go and you continue to dig into people's why. And you go down 7 layers, like, why do you want to become a rock star? Because then other people will adore me. Why do you want that? Oh, because, you know, like I felt very like I was bullied in school or like, I don't know, something. But over those 7 times that you just continue to go layer by layer and then peel the onion, it really gets into the root cause or the trauma that people have had in their lives that really affects how they see life should be, you know, about what they should be. And I see this a lot here in Singapore, which is where I live, where many people are kind of told what they need to be at, from a young age. Like, you know, you take exams. It's a very exam and test driven society. And so from like the age of 6, you already kind of know whether you're going to university, whether that's in the cards for you or not, which is really sad because people peak at different times, right? And so being told that you can't do something or whatever, it's so ingrained into your psyche from such a young age that I think a lot of people have to kind of get out of that. And, you know, there's research around women in STEM, right? Where with girls, young girls, if they actually, you know, in math, they do equally well as boys do. However, if a girl is asked ahead of time on an exam, a math test, like, you know, please state your gender, male or female, and they check box female, their math scores actually decline because of that. So it's really sad that they, yeah, there's a ton of research about this.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's how you believe you should be, right? And so for me, and you know, another example, and this is more like a bit awkward at times to share, but I have never been questioned about my intelligence, you know, like ever. So for me, like, you know, because I've never really been questioned, I always feel, oh, okay, like, especially in the dating world, which is something that I'm exploring at the moment, I feel like women are kind of segmented into like, oh, she's like the pretty one, or she's the smart one, or whatever, the driven one, or whatever. And so for me, I've always been like, okay, I know I'm like, I fit the smart one, like I can have an interesting conversation with people, but like, I haven't gotten enough like self-affirmation that I'm the pretty one. So I don't think I'm that, you know? So it's very interesting how we internalize what other people tell us to be, especially as women. And there's a lot of research around, you know, when we're younger, women are told, and there's a lot of social shift, sifting and conditioning that helps us understand that beauty really matters for a woman. And so women are told, or girls are told when they're young, oh, you're so beautiful. It's not, you don't hear so much you're so smart with women as you might hear with men. Or you, oh, great, you have like great leadership skills. He's going to be a great CEO one day. You know, that's something that you might hear someone tell of like a parents to a boy, but not so much to a girl. And so this is what gets internalized in our own psyche as well, that I can't be a CEO. And this is one of the stories that I share in my book about Taming the Inner Critic, and Vicky Tsai, where she didn't see herself as a CEO, you know, and despite that, she went to Harvard Business School and had a really impressive resume before that. You know, she didn't see herself that way because she didn't look like all the white men who led some of the most famous beauty companies in the world. And even then, you know, when she brought a private investor into the company, you know, they even said, oh, you don't look like a CEO. Let's get a white male to do it. And it didn't end up going very well for their company. In fact, they actually had to let go of that CEO and they had to ask her to return to become the CEO for a second time, therefore joining, you know, the likes of Bob Iger of Disney, of Charles Schulz, of, you know, who's the founder and CEO of Starbucks, as well as Steve Jobs, of Apple, all these different CEOs, they've come back. And like they did their comeback as a second time CEO because a lot of these boards realized, oh, we really need them. They did a really great job when they were CEOs, and whoever we found to replace them just wasn't good enough. So it's fascinating, all this internal dialogue that we have in our heads that's like due to social conditioning from a young age.
Absolutely. And gosh, I think we could talk about that for the rest of the day. You know, it's one of those things that I think we need to be really aware of how we're talking to ourselves and how we're talking to others. You know, a lot of people who listen to this podcast are female and have children. And so remembering this when we talk to kids, whether you have kids or not, it's like when you're talking to your nieces and nephews or kids that you're interacting with or your friends' kids and starting to say, you're so smart, no matter what the gender is. You're going to be a great CEO one day if that's what you choose to do. You know, having some of that language, I think, is so important. And you've just really shone a light on that. And I appreciate it. So as we wrap all of this up, if you would like to share how you view success and any thoughts you have around that. And then, of course, I would love for you to share how people can get their hands on the book and how they can learn more about you.
Yeah, sure. I'd say success means accepting life's ups and downs as they are, learning from them and growing from them. In terms of, you know, being able... Thanks. I tried to be concise there, actually.
I really like it.
In terms of just the call to action or if you want to follow me or if you want to learn more about the book, you can follow me on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn handle is WinnieWong41. You can find my book available online on Amazon. The ebook is going to be available in May 2023, and the paperback will be available in June 2023. And Amanda, I'll be sharing the link with you. So I hope that your audience will be super interested in the book.
Absolutely. And I'll make sure to have all the links in the show notes to LinkedIn and Amazon and all of those things. Winnie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Amanda.
I hope you really enjoyed that conversation with Winnie because I really enjoyed learning from her. And if you're feeling that inspiration after hearing all about her research, I want to leave you with her words. And what Winnie said that really captivated me in this moment of, you know, taking the next step is she said, "Realize that everyone goes through ups and downs and that you will pick yourself up, but it's important to always just take the next step. Move forward and understand that tomorrow you'll do better." And so that's what I want to leave you with today is know that it's just a good idea. You know, it's just a good idea to take the next step because no matter what your next step is, it's going to get you closer to what you're going after. And so I want to remind you that both Winnie and I have had ups and downs, and we are right there with you. If you would like more support from either one of us, we both have our books available. And if you're listening live, May of 2023, you should be able to get the digital version on Amazon. So the links are in the show notes. And in June of 2023, both of the books will be out in the wild and you can go get them. So thank you in advance if you will be supporting us in that way. But of course, we are still here no matter what. So remember to take your next step, no matter what it is for you. And until next time, give yourself permission to define success on your terms and grace along the way. I'll talk to you soon.